Salutations, Mets fans, and welcome to an extra bonus edition of Mazen Avenue Audio, official podcast of your SB Nation New York Mets site, Mazen Avenue. I'm your host, Jeffrey Paternostro, and with me for this extra want, two episodes in a week edition, is Chris McShane. Chris, welcome
Hello.
To the show. Hey. This is not going to be a regular thing, but there were some things that happened, Chris, on episode 44. I said some things. I said things like there was no way they would non-tender Justin Turner, who's in the Christmas card. And we spent like 15 minutes talking about Justin Turner as the 2014 Mets shortstop. And as soon as I hit stop on my call recorder from Skype, Justin Turner was non-tendered by the Mets. Thing that happened.
Yeah, that's some pretty great timing.
It was. But even if that hadn't happened, we're in like the furnace is... It's like a blast furnace on the hot stove right now. There's a lot of things happening. I think I would have done a second episode this week anyway. It was just a lot of news. And even if there wasn't a lot of news, Josh sat and rode an elephant. I would break the glass in case of emergency glass that covers my mic that I use for the podcast, for emergency podcast, just to talk about Jay Horwitz tweeting out a photo of Josh Sutton on his honeymoon in Thailand riding an elephant.
It was a top five Jay Horwitz tweet.
It was up there. And I'm not going to lie, I briefly considered it making it my desktop wallpaper, but I realized using a photo from Josh Sutton's honeymoon as my desktop wallpaper would be kind of creepy, and Josh Sutton is already on my desktop wallpaper.
Yeah, I would agree with the creepy part there.
It's a little weird.
It
is. It's weird. It's like Josh, like Jay Horwitz, like Facebook. I think he's like Facebook buddies with Josh Sutton. Decided to tweet out Josh Sutton's honeymoon photos.
Yeah. Oh, he's tweeted some things. You know, he occasionally tweets things making fun of his own staff, which, you know, hey, that's fair game. But there are some things he tweets about players that I don't know if the players necessarily approve before he does it.
Like Josh Sutton riding an elephant.
Yes.
It's funny because actually, in a weird possible coincidence, Darren Gorski also took his honeymoon in Thailand, which I know because I follow Darren Gorski on Twitter. Which should be no
right.
surprise to anyone that listens to this podcast. Hashtag Gorski. I wonder if they got some sort of like group deal for fringy Mets prospects.
It's possible. I mean, I feel like that sort of honeymoon deserves a write-up in the New York Times, like Shelby Miller's wedding.
Oh, good Lord. I love that. There's so many great... If you haven't read it, and I haven't because I steadfastly refuse to read anything in the vows section of New York Times... But I read synopses of it, or John Bernhardt and Lana Berry's back and forth on Twitter about said article. And it sounds kind of amazing for a variety of reasons. Mostly because they got Joe Kelly on the record talking about Shelby Miller's relationship. And because Shelby Miller used his vows article in the New York Times to take a shot at the Cardinals for not using him in the playoffs.
Yeah. Oh, it was gold.
These were all things that happened. So I think that covers the big news for the week. Josh Sutton rented an elephant on his honeymoon. Also, good news! The Mets are sending scouts to scout Barbaro Arizbel Arue Barruena. All right, so let's move on to the agenda for the podcast. That literally...
Howie Rose is having nightmares.
Yeah, that was just a joke for my friend Dorian, who's probably one of like three people listening to the podcast that will get this. Hi, Dorian. Let's move on to the actual agenda for episode 45. We'll talk about the non-tenders that we didn't talk about last week, specifically Justin Turner and Jeremy Hefner. After that, we'll assess the current Curtis Granderson situation. It's very fluid, and I fear that once again, 5 minutes after I hit stop on recording this podcast, something will happen to change the situation, but that's the risk we run. I'm not doing another podcast before next week. This is nothing that's going to happen. And after that, we will briskly move through the sort of more big picture news, the segment I'm calling Trade Tuesday. So we'll talk about all the trades that went down Tuesday and some other little bits and pieces of news, maybe where Robinson Cano might end up, the changes to the Japanese posting system. And after that, we have a couple emails, because somehow you've sent me more emails between in the last basically 48 hours. So this is episode 45. And 45, actually, we are in sort of the dregs of Mets numbers, but 45 has been a fairly well-worn number. Obviously, Zach Wheeler wears it on, at present day, but previously worn by Pedro Martinez as a Met, and Tug McGraw. Tough decision here for me, I'm not going to lie. I feel like maybe I've been leaning a little more towards my era of Met naming the episodes. I will cop to owning, to purchasing, and wearing a Vote for Pedro Martinez jersey that I bought, like the Napoleon Dynamite style, that I bought in the actual Mets team store in Manhattan.
Very nice.
I no longer own it. I think it, like many of my lamented Mets jerseys, John Main and Lasting's Millage included, it went to Goodwill at some point. I'm in the process of moving right now, and I've culled down my Mets jerseys to just R.A. Dickey. I'm very proud of myself.
That's pretty good. My current stock is just Harvey and Wheeler. And this has come up on the podcast before. There is a John Main jersey that may have been donated last fall.
We still haven't figured out where your John Main jersey is?
No, it's either in a closet of clothing I don't really wear regularly, but have not parted with yet, or I already parted with it. So one of these days, I'll figure out where it is.
I should say I also own it's not a jersey per se, but I own a screen printed tee from Amelie Mancini, who runs Left Field Cards, which is a really cool, she has like baseball merchandise, like baseball card sets and t-shirts. I have a Daryl Strawberry like screen printed jersey from her that's really cool that I wear a lot. And I think I'm going to wear in Montreal for the Expos games next year, or the games in the Expos stadium. Wear that with the Expos hat. And wear that one day and wear the R.A. Dickey jersey, whatever day he pitches. Like, I feel like it's a Toronto Mets exhibition game. They have to pitch R.A. Dickey one of those 2 days. Whichever day he pitches, I'll wear the R.A. Dickey jersey.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
But this is the Tug McGraw edition, primarily because he was actually the best Mets player to wear 45, and because I really wanted to title the episode, You Gotta Believe, in parentheses, the Mets will spend money. That's where the point we are in the offseason right now. Before we get to the Mets hot stove action, I do want to amend our discussion episode 44 of the non-tenders to include the full range of non-tenders. And we'll start with Justin Turner. This was a surprise to me, as those of you who listened to episode 44 are probably well aware. And I'm a little conflicted. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I've always been, you know, I'm a Josh Satin guy, Chris, in case you didn't know. And sort of one of my points I think I've made over the years is that the differences between Josh Satin and Justin Turner are very slight. And Turner just happened to make the majors first for various reasons. So I'm not really, I don't know, I just, there's also the incident where Justin Turner trolled me on Twitter. This was the thing that happened.
Yep.
But all that said, you know, despite, it's like, this is like the third act of like a touching Hallmark drama where Justin Turner wins me over. Because I get the impression that he genuinely liked being a Met.
Yeah, no, it does seem that way. And it's funny now, as the off season started, you know, I looked at him a little more objectively. And I think this season too, that's my dog. That's Macy, everybody.
And my dog's scratching himself in the background. It's fine.
Nice. Well, but yeah, Turner, I don't know, maybe the hyperbole about how great he was a little toned down this year. Maybe I warmed up to him a little bit. Whatever it was, when the offseason started, I was able to just kind of look at the numbers and say, hey, this is a useful utility player, and you know, he's not as bad with the bat as maybe I thought he was a couple of years ago. And yeah, it's just it was definitely a surprise to see him go. The one thing over the course of the season was just kind of the roster construction in terms of the bench. I mean, Turner did play over the course of his time with the Mets, assuming that it's over and he doesn't come back.
I have to imagine somebody give him a 40-man spot somewhere, because he's, like you said, a fairly useful bench piece.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he played every position in the infield, but perhaps the Mets are thinking that they want two outfielders on their bench, one true middle infielder who can back up shortstop better than Turner could, and then essentially that Josh Satin would be the first base platoon slash, you know, third base backup for David Wright. So I during the season, I remember thinking that about the makeup of the roster. So that's where the non-tender makes a little bit of sense to me. But just in terms of his overall, you know, stats, it was still surprising.
Yeah, I think you touched on it. The idea that you can't necessarily replace Turner's production for $800,000. I mean, he's like a league average hitter. It's interesting. He was a 95 OPS plus as a Met, so slightly below average. Marlon Anderson, who I think we'll both agree is much better regarded among Mets fans as a pinch hitter bench piece, was a 78 OPS plus as a Met. But I think what we're going to see is, you're right, it's not they're going to replace Turner, it's just they're going to send his at-bats to Josh Satin and whoever their backup middle infielder is, whether it's Tejada or somebody they bring in to back up Tejada. Now, are either of those a markedly better player than Turner? I mean, we don't know what we're getting from Tejada. But both Tejada and Satin can be deployed differently. You know, Satin has a clear platoon split where Turner really doesn't. He had a slight reverse split. And Tejada, you know, can actually back up in shortstop, where Turner, despite my spending 20 minutes talking about Justin Turner's 2014 shortstop, probably shouldn't be a backup shortstop. As I quickly backpedal in reverse field 3 days later.
Yeah. I mean, well, the one nice thing about Tejada, if he is playing that role, you know, against a tough lefty, if Daniel Murphy is still the second baseman on the 2014 Mets, a tough lefty, Tejada might actually be a useful guy to play at second base if they find another shortstop. There are a lot of ifs when you talk about the Mets.
Yeah, and I think what we're going to see, I mean, it looks like they're focused on the outfield for the offseason, so aggressively, you know, Murphy's going to play pretty much every day, but you're right. You know, pick and choose your spot to give him a day off against a tough lefty, use Tejada. You know, they're going to be platooning a lot in the infield, probably, at first at least, certainly. So Turner didn't really fit in that roster. I mean, you figure they're going to use a 13-12 alignment, like every team does now. That base gives you five bench pieces. So, you know, two backup outfielders. You know, Eric Young and somebody else, whether it's Matt Dendecker, Kirk Neuenheis, or if they go externally as well, that's certainly an option. Andrew Brown. You know, backup corner infielder in Satin. I mean, you figure Wright will play pretty much every day. And I think if Wright's out for a extended period of time, you'll probably see Flores at third. But it's like a once every other week or once a month backup. Satin can certainly handle third and platoon at first with Duder or Davis. And then a shortstop, second base backup, and your backup catcher. And that pretty much is your bench. And that's fine. With the knowledge that, you know, that Eric Young can also play second in a pinch for whatever reason. Assuming he's not starting at second base, which seems to be Adam Rubin's current hobby horse. But we're trying to keep this short, so I won't get into the get into my feelings about Eric Young as a starting second baseman in 2014.
Well, as you pointed out on Twitter the other day, there's a reason. There must be a reason why the Rockies.
You would think they did not have exactly have a cavalcade of excellent second basemen while he was there.
Of course, after the Dexter Fowler trade, which is one of the things that happened on
Trade Tuesday, yes.
Yes. Sam Page pointed out, you know, maybe I don't trust the Rutgers player evaluation.
Fair. That's certainly fair. I don't know what their evaluation of is Eric Young at second, but he also can't hit. I don't care what their evaluation of it, of Eric Young's right. defense is. I'm just not convinced the bat will carry.
Yeah.
At second base. But I feel it's weird. I feel kind of. I mean, I think Turner will be fine. He'll glom on somewhere else and probably get similar money to what he would have made in arbitration. Maybe a little bit more actually as a free agent. And really, I can't do justice to sort of the Justin Turner era better than Rob already did at Amazing Avenue. His memories of Justin Turner posts. I was disappointed there was no gif of Justin Turner pieing Kirk Nieuwenhuis with a real pie. That was the one glaring omission, I think.
Oh, yeah. Step up your game, Rob.
But it's pretty cool. I mean, this team has a no problem trading, you know, R.A. Dickey the Elf, so I shouldn't be surprised, I guess, that they non-tender Justin Turner, the star of the 2013 Mets Christmas card. But obviously, I didn't see it coming, so that's on me. Listeners,
yeah,
I apologize.
Maybe it is a sign of some sort of independence for the front office, which, you know, is something I feel like we as Mets fans have always worried about, but most sports fans probably worry about as well. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading into it too much, but maybe.
No, we always joke that Terry would, you know, as long as Terry had a job, Turner would have a job, but, you know, maybe not. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to read into it. I mean, we're spending a lot of time on the non-tender of Justin Turner. But, I mean, I'm sure he'll recede into Mets history now, assuming he doesn't come back on a minor league deal. And, as I said, I don't know why he would necessarily. He's a guy that can hit a little bit and play multiple positions in the infield. That usually gets, you know, like I said, Skip Schumacher got 2 years guaranteed. As did Willie Bloomquist, and Turner's a comparable player to Schumacher, though, you know, probably shouldn't play in the outfield, but certainly better than Bloomquist. Has the Grisham. Would definitely complain if someone jumped into their pool, into his pool, into his team's pool.
Oh, yeah.
If they clinch a title there. I feel like Justin Turner would do that. He would get in front of that and say some things to the media about it. Maybe he fits. Maybe he's a good fit in Arizona for the Grishenbacks. I'd be okay with that. But I think he'll be fine. Possibly less fine is Jeremy Hefner. And I got to say, I was a little unexpected. But in the end, given they non-tendered Justin Turner, I don't think we should be that surprised they non-tendered Jeremy Hefner. I mean, they're kind of give the team similar value. Obviously, one's a pitcher, one's a position player. But, I mean, Turner would have actually given you value in 2014. And the fact that they non-tendered him says they're really looking at 40-man roster flexibility for this offseason to add pieces of some sort. If they're going to do that with Turner, you know, why not do it with Hefner, a guy who's not going to give you any value in 2014? It has to be kept on the 40-man roster. It's just a dead spot.
Yeah, I think, you know, I was thinking about it back last winter and maybe even a little bit before that. I remember suggesting, okay, maybe Jeremy Hefner is a part of the rotation come opening day. And there was a lot of skepticism then, and rightfully so, because of his lack of a track record and you know, what he had shown in the minors wasn't anything particularly special. So when he got non-tendered, there was some negative reaction to that, and I don't think it's necessarily performance-based that people are worried that, oh, they're going to lose out on, you know, Hefner's breakout in 2015. I almost wonder, just because the money is such a focus right now, and it has been, obviously, for the last few years, if people aren't just upset that, okay, Hefner, you know, he gave you this time, he was a very affordable player, and now he hurts himself and he gets cut.
See, I don't buy that argument, though, because they're just going to replace him with someone making the minimum anyway. There's no real cost saving. And with Turner, they're going to save like $300,000. I just don't see the money issue. I mean, with Kintney and Acheson, your clearing spots. I think with Hefner, your clearing spots. And look, I like I like Jeremy Hefner. He's, and again, like with Turner, he's a nice guy. It's a nice story. But, you know, if you look at where the team's going to be in 2015, Hefner's basically a replacement-level arm that had a few good months. And he can't... He doesn't really fit in the pen like Carlos Torres does, who I think can fill a similar role for this team going forward. I don't see Hefner's playing up in the pen the same way the Torres' stuff did. You got Jacob deGrom, who again kind of fits that back-end starter swingman role. Do you really need three of those guys on the 40-man roster in 2015? I don't see it. I don't think he's necessarily better than those two players.
Right. Oh, yeah, no, I agree with you. I was kind of trying to play devil's advocate to myself. I think the value of a roster spot was probably a little underestimated by anybody who was who's upset about that non-tender. But you know, it opens things up. I don't expect the Mets to sign 5 free agents this winter, but maybe they'll sign 3 and have a spot in the Rule 5 draft.
Yeah, Rule 5 draft.
Oh, yeah. Very.
I'm getting excited now. 5 open roster spots. They're going to draft somebody.
Oh, yeah, they have to.
They really, right? It's like they're not going to sign 5 guys. I don't know who it's going to be. Jihoon Ha from the Cubs, maybe? Lefty bat off the outfield as a 5th outfielder? Is he better than Dendecker? I don't know, but we'll cover it here. The thing that's going to happen, we'll break down the Rule 5 draft on this podcast.
Of course.
But no, you're right. It's just, it sucks that he got hurt. And if he didn't, he'd be certainly in the mixer rotation spot next year. And if not that, it's like a swingman type role. But it's, he's a nice dude. It's like the Colin McHugh problem. Colin McHugh, great guy. Fun Twitter account. I guess he's on Instagram now. He's been pitching in another Venezuelan Winter League killer. But it's just, at a certain point, the stuff's the stuff. And he's coming off Tommy John surgery is kind of not as big a deal as it used to be. You expect him to recover, but, recover to what? It's just not... if Jeremy Hefner's in your 2015 rotation, something didn't go right for this team, for this organization, really. Given the surplus of arms, not surplus, but given the lineup of arms they have coming up in the next 18 months.
Yeah, that's, that's basically it. And, you look at some guys recently who have had Tommy John, and that first year back might not be quite up to par with their norm. And this might be something we've touched on the podcast in the past, too. If Matt Harvey comes back in 2015 and pitches a full season and is, good but not a top 5 pitcher in baseball, that shouldn't be a cause for panic. But if Hefner is on a similar timeline, that return to the big leagues, that it could be tough for him, because if he takes a step, just a notch down from what he's done so far, he might find himself off the major league roster.
Yeah, he's been a replacement level pitcher, which doesn't have zero value, as you might think, but they have other options. Whether it's Montero or DeGrom, you figure Montero, DeGrom, and Syndergaard are contributing by 2015. It's just, he was a nice pickup. It sucks that he bled his arm. It's an accounting decision. It's business. That is kind of blows, but that's, realistically, if they value that 40-man roster spot, and that spot does have value for a team that has holes that need to be filled elsewhere, especially in 2014, they need to find another pitcher for that rotation, as it looks like right now. They can't be holding a spot for Hefner until April.
Yeah,
it sucks.
Yeah.
I hope he comes back on a minor league deal and rehabs and comes back in 2015 and gives it, gets another shot. But, at the end of the day, Sandy Alderson's going to do what's best for business.
Yeah, I've said to some friends recently, everybody wants the Mets to win more than 74 games, but nobody wants to let go of their favorite current Mets.
Jeremy Hefner's not in a... He's not in the rotation of a playoff team.
Right.
I hate to say it, but realistically, he's you know, a number five, number six type.
Right. And if he were healthy this winter going into next season, would people be saying, oh, the Mets rotation is all set? You know, Harvey's gone, but we have Wheeler, G, Nice, Hefner, and we'll figure out that fifth spot. You know, I don't think that would be the case.
No, I mean, and again, it's sort of like you get the impression of these guys, and Twitter has a lot to do with it. Hefner and Turner seem like, if you follow them on Twitter and like that, they seem like, you know, you get attached to these players, and that's fine. I'm not going to tell you how to be a fan, certainly, but in the end, you gotta separate that from. And I think, in a way, I get the impression that, you know, Hefner and Turner are more aware of this fact sort of than Mets fans might be. I got the impression, at least. I mean, I'm truly disappointed. No one wants to be non-tendered. But I think they kind of know that, you know, that's the kind of thing that happens. And I think, Turner will be fine. And I think if Hefner comes back from Tommy John, all right, he'll glom on somewhere. And I hope it's with the Mets, but, you know, it might not be. And that's okay, too.
Yeah, they certainly handled the non-tender on Twitter better than Corey Vaughn handled his non-addition to the 40-man roster.
Wow, I'm gonna, I could say some things, I'm not going to.
It's just.
You know, it's...
They're older, they're probably a little wiser, and they've at least made it, so...
No, I totally...
But, yeah.
I'd rather have Corey Vaughn be upset about that than not upset about that, I guess. But again, I'm coming from a different probably place here than you are. Right. And yeah, it's kind of, yeah, we're just going to move on. Let's move on to Curtis Granderson. Actually, I have no issue with Corey Vaughn, obviously. But yeah, I did notice that when that happened. And if he gets picked in the Rule 5 draft and climbs on with another roster, it's not the end of the world, certainly, and good for him and all that. But, yeah, I mean, he's... I think you're right. There's a certain... We could spend an entire podcast talking about how athletes take to Twitter or don't take to Twitter, as the case may be.
Right, literal Mets Twitter,
actual Mets that are on Twitter. Yes. you know, there are guys that I've always kind of wondered why the team doesn't have like a real social media consultant that like takes these guys aside. And I think it's more with prospects than with actual Mets on Twitter, as it were, just to sort of point these guys in the right direction. I'll, you know, if someone from the Mets organization wants to contact me, I'm more than happy to take that position. My resume is available. Should sign up for LinkedIn at some point. I'm not on LinkedIn, but just be like, you know, just sort of print out the feeds of like Colin McHugh or like Brandon McCarthy. Like, this is what you should do on Twitter. Like, be funny or be boring, basically.
Yeah.
But I mean, there have been, it's like, little things, you know, stuff that there was a whole thing where a couple, I mean, probably about a month ago, you know, Dom Smith, who is 19 years old, if that, at this point, you know, I don't have his, birth date in front of me. He was a young 18 when he was drafted. He's probably not even 19 yet. You know, tweeted out a picture of him giving a massage to a dude on a bus and then retweeted some of his friends using a slur that is generally used for homosexuals on Twitter, just retweeted it. It's like a joke. But is that a big deal? No, but I don't think a lot of, nor should we expect teenagers to understand how they need to navigate social media as a professional now.
Right.
It's just not something, it's just, they don't really get it. Like, I mean, as someone who's on Twitter really way too much, I spend too much time on Twitter. I have a very clear understanding of what I tweet versus what, you know, the rest of my life is. I don't like think about Josh Satin constantly. That's not something that happens. But you would get that impression on my Twitter feed, but I'm able to keep that, you know, what I do outside of Twitter separate from what Twitter is. Like, you watch my Twitter feed, you wouldn't know what I do for a living, and that's kind of the way I like it. You wouldn't know what my political beliefs are, and that's the way I like it.
Right.
But I think it's a tough line to straddle between sort of, like, being who you are on Twitter for these guys in a lot of cases, and just sort of, like, you know, wanting to still be able to sort of muck around with your friends. And I do that, too. I mean, I basically gave a shout-out to Dorian on the podcast. And I'm happy to be able to do that. But sort of what comes with the responsibility, I want to say responsibility, but sort of comes with the package. It's a package deal. If you're a Mets prospect, especially if one of note, and you get the early round bonus, you know, you sort of have, and people are on Twitter as a matter of course, and I'm not saying they should manage it in a certain way, but if they don't, it's going to be an issue. We saw that when the Mets traded for Noah Syndergaard. Within 15 minutes of the Mets trading for Noah Syndergaard, the New York Daily News had a quote, a tweet from Noah Syndergaard where he used a slur for homosexuals on Twitter, and that became a story for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
That's just realistically what is going to happen. And that's where we are in the social media world. And I've always been very, very clear about this. If you expect, you know, the players you root for, you know, baseball players in general, and I'm going to briefly break the Amazing Avenue No Politics rule here. Not really, but kind of. If you expect the players you root for to share your political, moral, religious, social beliefs, you're probably barking up the wrong tree unless you belong to a certain strata of political beliefs. There was an issue with Rob Whalen probably last year around election time. And it's got to go both ways. I mean, you have to kind of understand, I'm going way off the beaten path. That's what happens when I have a couple beers and a bourbon before I do a podcast. But you really have to understand that they come from a very different background than you are if you're on Twitter, probably, I guess is the way to put it. You know, I can say I have no problem separating that. It's like I'm rooting for Laundry. I think I've said that on a podcast before.
Oh, yeah.
And it's fine. It's not, it really never comes into the public sphere for the most part. But, you know, Twitter changes that. And I always kind of wonder, because I follow a large number of Mets prospects on Twitter because I have to. It's like my job. And mostly it's, you know, Call of Duty and Chipotle and, you know, whatever else. And that's fine. It's great. But as much as I hate to sort of, like, Darren Rovell this, I mean, you've got to be realistic sort of about, you know, what something very clearly changes in your life once you sign that first contract. And once you get drafted as a high pick. And people will find you. You know, Mets fans will find you.
Oh, yeah. It's a nice segue into Curtis Granderson.
Thank you. Please segue before I get myself in more trouble.
A good friend of mine asked me yesterday. So I got a notification that 50 of my, you know,
the
people I follow started
in the new Twitter apparently
started following Curtis Granderson. And did I miss something? You know. So there we go. Mets fans will find you before you're even affiliated with the organization.
Oh yeah. I was considering. I was. Sort of glancing across Baseball America's top 100 college dudes for 2014. And I'm like, I should follow Sean Newcomb on Twitter because, you know, he went to University of Hartford. I went to University of Hartford. It's one of my multiple colleges that I went to. And, you know, a guy I'm going to be scouting this year because he'll go around. He'll be in the sort of range of the Mets pick. So I should follow him on Twitter. And that's something that happens to these guys. And it's not... You know, it is what it is. If you're going to be on Twitter, it's going to be a thing. And it's going to be a thing for, you know, for Granderson, certainly. If he signs with the Mets, he's going to pay. I mean, I'm sure he's not lacking for Twitter followers as it is. I don't follow him, so I can't speak to how many he has or how he specifically uses Twitter. But we should segue into talking about Curtis Granderson, because look at the Mets are going to sign Curtis Granderson, Chris.
It does, and I like it. So take that, Rob, for...
You know, it's I'm talking myself into Curtis Granderson. I think it's amusing to me personally that there've been basically the agenda for talking about Curtis Granderson on this podcast has changed three times since I drew it up at around 9 a.m. today. It's just recording this podcast on Thursday night. So since about 9 a.m. Thursday, I was like, oh, they're absolutely gonna sign him. They're the only team in on it. Oh, it looks like they're going to sign him for 4 years. They're using the fourth year as a way to get him to take less money the first year because of their loan that's due with J.P. Morgan in June, which allowed me to make jokes like J.P. Morgan should be given a special assistant to the GM title. and now it seems like, oh, they're not actually going 4 years. They're sticking to 3 years. And Granderson wants 4 years. They're going to be bidding against themselves. I don't know how this is going to play out. Is he going to get 4 years somewhere else? I've heard 464, which seems like a lot of money. I mean, that's just what he wants. But, I mean, let's throw out the money. Curtis Granderson, the player, I mean, if he's healthy, I mean, he's clearly an upgrade for the Mets outfield, given over the internal options.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
And I think there's certainly an idea out there that, yes, he does no longer has the short porch, the little league field, whatever you want to call it, that he had in Yankee Stadium. But, I mean, he's a deadpool hitter. And if you're a dead pole left-handed hitter, you can yank balls out at Citi Field. If you've only watched Mets hitters at Citi Field, you probably haven't seen that the last few years. But other hitters that are dead pole, I mean, if you're driving the ball more to left center, like someone like Lucas Duda, you know, that can affect your power. But you can yank a ball out at Citi Field if you're a left-handed hitter on the right field line. Now, is it as good a left-handed hitting home run park as Yankee Stadium, New Yankee Stadium? No. But it's neutral to slightly above average.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a reason why Chase Utley has a corner of the park associated with his name informally. You know, I mean, it's certainly not impossible. And the Pepsi porch really isn't that far of a shot. It's a different type of home run, but it's... You know, it's not inconceivable for a left-handed power hitter to park some up there. I think one of the worst things about Carlos Delgado's injury in 2009 and the way his career just kind of ended was that we didn't get to watch a full season of him hitting home runs up into that porch.
No, it's true. It's not, you know, I watched a lot of BP at the Futures game, and I watched Jock Peterson, who's got a little bit of pop, but not a ton of pop. And I'm sure he'll come again because somebody asked us an email this week about trading Daniel Murphy, so I'm going to make a Daniel Murphy for Jock Peterson reference probably at some point. But he was yanking balls into the second deck at City like it was easy in BP. And yeah, it's BP. But, you know, him, Yelich, you can... If you're a dead pole hitter, which Granderson's... Where Granderson's power is now is certainly dead pole to right field. You know, he could yank 30 balls out. Is he going to hit 40 home runs in City Field? Probably not. But he's a guy that hit 30 home runs there, probably 25 to 30. He'll take walks. The defense should be okay in a corner. I mean, they're basically, if they sign Granderson, going to be starting three center fielders with Lagares, Young, and Granderson. We haven't touched on the fact that Lagares is apparently coming back to New York to have his knee looked at, but I'm going to ignore that for now.
Yeah.
We'll just, if it was serious, I'm sure it would be an issue. You know, I will say that it was a long season for Lagares. It was his first real professional season. He played a lot of games and then went and played winter ball. I'm going to just assume he's wearing down a little bit. That's fine. But still, I don't know how they're going to align it. Granderson's got the better arm, but he's played more left than right. They'll figure it out. You know, it's a pretty big right field in Citi Field compared to left field, so maybe you play Young, who's a little more athletic there. I don't know. But I think if he's healthy and is able to have a gentle decline period, because, you know, he's not young, age, not name, which I think I have to clarify now since the Mets have all the Youngs. I think if you can get him for like 345, that's fine. If it's 464, I get a little nervous.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly get that. I just know that they might have to go a little extra, especially at this phase, to persuade guys to, you know, to sign with them.
I guess that's probably true. I just don't know if for someone like Granderson. I mean, the names or the teams that I've heard associated with, like the White Sox, the Mariners, are those really more attractive landing spots than the Mets?
Right. Well, yeah, no, that's true. I guess I was just thinking that more in general. The best offer is the best offer, and that'll usually land you the player.
I mean, he did say a couple weeks ago that he wants to play for a winner. But, you know, the winner is the person offering the most money. It's generally how it goes in free agency. If, you know, Robinson Cano signs for 10 years and $230 million in Seattle, Seattle's the winner.
Right.
But it's frightening. Toby High, a Mets minor league blog, wrote about sort of his baseball reference comps recently, and they didn't age well. You know, BR comps aren't destiny, but this is the guy that, you know, he's not going to hit for a lot of average. He's a fly ball hitter moving into a neutral to slightly pitcher's park. You know, even as a left-handed hitter, there's some decline risk here, certainly, where he could fall off a cliff. But it's, if you can get him for 3 years, which as I frantically check Twitter to make sure nothing has happened in the last 15 minutes.
The most recent update from Mike Puma is that it's unlikely anything gets resolved.
I'm reading the exact same tweet, yes.
Tonight between Mets and Granderson. So this podcast should be good by the time you listen.
We should be okay.
To
this should still be timely. Thank God. I'll be able to move things this weekend without having to worry about scheduling a third podcast for the week.
Yes.
So I guess I'm fine with Curtis Granderson. I like him better than Nelson Cruz, so that's where we're at now.
Yeah, if we can't have Chu and our dream reunion with Carlos Beltran just isn't in the cards.
That's actually a good question. There's rumors coming out that there's no 3 years, $48 million on the table from the Royals for Beltran. Let's say you can get either Granderson or Beltran at 3 years, 45. Which one do you take?
Well, oh, man. I mean, I would take Beltran, but I'm, you know.
Yeah, I think that's the problem, is that we both take Beltran, but probably not for baseball reasons.
Yeah, I mean, there's that nostalgia for the team that he was on, particularly the 2006 one, and just how great he was.
The fact that it would probably send him into the Hall of Fame as a Met.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, there's plenty there. And he's a more certain hitter, even though he's a few years older. But obviously the risk is with his defense.
Actually, Rob tweeted out they have a fairly similar triple slash line for the last 3 years. Though that doesn't, you know, factor in that Granderson was playing in New York and Beltran was playing in, you know, San Francisco, the St. Louis and Citi Field, which tend to play more neutral to pitcher's parks. But yes, the defense is an issue, and I feel like he kind of needs to go to a place where he can DH twice a week. I don't know if that's Kansas City. They don't trade Billy Butler, but It's tough for me because I think, and Beltran's obviously older too, but has aged better so far. I want Beltran back. I can't help it.
Yeah.
It's not. I mean, I'm fine with Granderson, but god damn it, I want Carlos Beltran back.
Yeah. No. It's. I mean, hey, trade for Jose Reyes, re-sign Beltran. And we'll be happy, right?
Yeah, pretty much. If you're gonna fail spectacularly.
Yes.
It does transition well into Trade Tuesday, which happened. That's the thing that happened between episode 44 and episode 45. And I mean, it wasn't anything crazy. There were a lot of one-sided deals, at least according to Twitter. And I think there were probably some one-sided deals according to me too. So I guess we can call this segment "Why No Mets Involved." That's Y N O Mets.
Yes.
Somebody asked me on the Twitter what sort of the comparable Mets deal for Doug Fister would have been, and Toby Hyde wrote about this morning, and we pretty much agreed. We disagreed on the Ian Kroll component, I guess. I used Familia just because Familia was more of a starter in the minors like Kroll was. But Toby went for the handedness and went with Josh Eggen because the Mets just don't have enough left-handed pitchers for me to really make a comp. But I came up with, we agreed on Montero for Robbie Ray and Turner for Steve Lombardozzi. And then I was like, I don't remember who it was, but he's like, well, you wouldn't trade Montero, Turner, and J.R. Smiley for 2 years Doug Fister. Would you be like, yes, absolutely I would, in a heartbeat, because Doug Fister is a very good pitcher.
Yeah.
But it just wasn't, I'd do it, but they were looking for very specific things, according to Alex Anthopoulos, the Toronto Blue Jays GM, who I guess was kind of around the periphery of the Doug Fister deal. And, you know, according to Ken Rosenthal, the GMs didn't know that he was available or didn't ask. It's like not like you don't get to vet the trade with 29 other GMs. It's not like, you know, this isn't your fantasy league, guys. You don't get to complain that somebody didn't, you know, update their on-the-block listing to include Doug Fister. I mean, you knew Scherzer was theoretically available. So I guess I assume just, you know, sometimes you'll have a previous, you know, maybe Dombrowski and Rizzo have a previous relationship, or Rizzo asked about Scherzer and didn't like the price. Like, oh, Doug Fister available? I was like, all right, well, if you're going to trade Fister, we want, you know, X, Y, and Z. And Dombrowski said, Rizzo said, oh, I can work with that. How about this guy instead of that guy? And then it just sort of happened. It's not, you know, Mike Rizzo is not calling Sandy Alderson and be like, hey, it turns out Doug Fister is available. So if you want to make an offer, here's what I'm thinking. It doesn't happen. I'm sorry, you know. I don't know what Alderson's working on right now in terms of the trade market. I know that none of these trades that we heard about, whether the Fowler trade or the Craig Gentry for Michael Choice trade or the Doug Fister trade, nobody had it. There were no rumors.
Right.
It just sort of happened. So I think it's reasonable to think that the Mets are working on something on the trade market. They're making phone calls. You know, laying the groundwork for the winter meetings or whatever. You know, Mark Carrig had the Mets' interest in Chris Young a couple weeks before they signed him, but there was really nothing in the interim. And then it was like, oh, the Mets are signing Chris Young. So I think people become too reliant on Twitter rumors. I mean, we're seeing it sort of with Robinson Cano now, where it's various conflicting reports on whether the Mariners have offered him $230 million or whether that's what he's requesting, or maybe the Mariners have offered him $225 million now. So if you try to just, you know, read the tea leaves on Twitter, yeah, it doesn't look like the Mets are doing anything.
Right.
Outside of Curtis Granderson.
Oh, yeah. No, but even, I mean, not that the tenure of this front office has been perfect. I don't want to make it sound like that.
Nope.
But just in terms of specifically this, things that they have done over the last few years have not generally been out there. I mean, the Granderson thing is the exception. We've probably heard more rumors about this potential deal than we heard about any of the major deals the Mets made.
Yeah.
I mean, the Beltran for Wheeler trade, there was at least several hours, if not maybe a day.
There was a lot of Beltran for Gary Brown before there was Beltran for Wheeler, though.
Right.
I distinctly remember sitting in my old apartment in Canton, talking myself into Gary Brown as I watched my Twitter feed go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it was Dickey for Arancibia.
And Arancibia and Ghost, yes.
Yes. So, you know, it's, I get it, and I certainly understand the impatience. And I'm ready to lose my patience by the end of this offseason if things aren't really going better. But yeah, the kind of constant search for evidence of the Mets front office doing something. I am certain, whether or not we agree with what they're going to do, I'm certain they're doing something.
We got breaking news, Rob. I just called you Rob. Good, we're on a good return to normal. According to Ken Rosenthal, the Mariners have just signed Rafael Furcal on a 1-year deal as the everyday second baseman. According to Ken Rosenthal. That's interesting. That's the plan, eh? That's what you're going with. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, that is.
Keep chopping that wood, Jack Zarydnik. Somehow I don't think that's going to make Cano bring his numbers down, I feel like.
Yeah, probably not.
Let's move on to the emails. As always, you emailed me in the last 72 hours, so good for you. You get a bonus, faster answering of your emails than there normally would have been. But you can email the podcast at podcast@amazonavenueaudio.com. It's podcast@amazonavenueaudio.com. We actually got 3 emails. I'm only answering 2. Randy Brandt emailed the podcast multiple times. I'm sorry, Randy. I just didn't have time to research your question, which is very prospect intensive. But we'll answer it on episode 46, I promise. So for this edition, we have 2 emails. And the first one is from Joel. Love the podcast, guys. My question is a hypothetical trade situation, which we love on Amazing Avenue Audio. Let's assume Matt Harvey didn't have Tommy John surgery and finished the year strong with no injury concerns. How many players / prospects would you trade Harvey for straight up in a 1-for-1 deal? Of course, take into consideration contract status and fit on the Mets. Thanks for the great content. You know, honestly, I don't know if there's a single... In a 1-for-1 deal, I know when Fangraphs did their trade value series this year, they had Matt Harvey higher than any other pitcher. That was pre-Tommy John surgery, so that seems appropriate. There's just not a lot of players, assuming a healthy Matt Harvey, that I would trade straight up for.
Yeah, I was about to say Mike Trout. That was pretty much my answer.
Yeah, I mean, Trout, Harper, Machado... after that, it gets dicey.
Yeah.
Prospects? I'm trying to think who's going to be... Byron Buxton? Would I do that? I'd have to think about it. I'm not saying I wouldn't. I'd have to think about it, but I don't think I would. There's certainly no current-day pitching prospects that I would trade Harvey for. You know, not Archie Bradley, not Taijuan Walker. I trade him for Gerrit Cole? Probably not. No, I wouldn't trade him for Gerrit Cole. I think Trout, Harper, Machado might be my list.
Yeah.
I mean, figuring fit on the Mets, they need outfielders, so Trout and Harper are an obvious fit. Play Machado at short. I mean, he's hurt too now, so that makes it a little dicier, but... I mean, Jonah Carey just did... his trade value series over at Grantland, and he had a post-injury Harvey at 17, so that kind of tells you, you know, even, you know, figuring he's going to miss all of 2014, and, you know, Tommy John surgery is not a cut-and-dry thing that is so incredibly valuable asset the Mets have in Matt Harvey. And I don't think, you know, you watch it. I still have Stanton. We trade Harvey straight up for Giancarlo Stanton. I don't think I would.
No, I wouldn't. I would probably be comfortable trading some of the other pitching the Mets have, but you know, Stanton is great, and I would absolutely love to watch him play for the Mets, but yeah.
Probably got to throw in Andrew McCutchen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. It's a little closer to the line. It's not obvious, but I think I'd do it. I'm just looking at guys that Carey has. Longoria doesn't fit. He's a third baseman. I'm not convinced he's appreciably better than Wright. The contract's probably a little better. Buster Posey? You know, how long is he going to catch? I guess is the question there. So, yeah, I got Harper, Trout, Machado, McCutchen, I guess. That's probably it, though.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I would take everything going right for pretty much all the other pitchers the Mets have to even be comfortable with that kind of deal. I mean, even if you were uncomfortable, if the Angels came calling and offered you Trout.
I think I'd be comfortable.
Yeah, you probably kind of have to say yes.
I wouldn't be thrilled, but you know, it's Mike Trout. So yeah, I wouldn't drive Matt Harvey to the airport, but I'd hire someone to do it. I foot the bill. Our next email is from Gene. Hi guys, great job on the podcast as always. The Mets fan living in Europe. It's great to get some smart Mets talk once a week. Twice a week this week, Gene. Maybe just once a week. I don't know how smart we've been. But to remind me of home, I have a quick question for the show and love your thoughts. Specifically, I was thinking of Daniel Murphy's trade value and potential landing spots for him. He's a good steady player with doubles power, excellent base running and durability. Importantly, he has cost control, which is a nice asset in this year's insane market. First, does it even make sense to trade Murphy? Is there value there? I was shocked how little it took the Astros, or for the Astros, to get Dexter Fowler, another around two baseball reference war player that is cost control. Second, if it does make sense to trade him, what are some natural spots for him? Kansas City, the Yankees, if they don't re-sign Cano? Not sure about others. And finally, do any of these teams have prospects that are interesting to you guys and might be included in a package for Murph? Thanks again for the great podcast. I look forward to your response. Happy holidays, Gene. I think I'm contractually obligated as a writer for Amazing Avenue to mention the Jock Peterson for Daniel Murphy trade.
Yes.
So, yeah, the Dodgers need a second baseman. So they don't bring back Mark Ellis. So Daniel Murphy for Jock Peterson. Is that actually going to happen? I don't think so. Assessing Murphy's value is difficult. Because he's kind of a league average-y player at second base. But there aren't a lot of league average-y players at second base kicking around. I mean, there are teams that are in the playoff hunt. I mean, you mentioned the Yankees, assuming Cano signs with the Mariners. And we should clarify, as Ken Rosenthal clarified, that Rafael Furcal signed with the Marlins, not with the Mariners. You probably already know this, but I'm going to clarify anyway. So the Yankees might need a second baseman if Robinson Cano signs with the Mariners, other than Kelly Johnson. Kelly Johnson is a kind of a Murph-like player, so who knows? You know, Kansas City still needs a second baseman and have shown a willingness to trade assets to get players they think can help them in the short term. And Murph fits there. I mean, you've got 2 years of control with Murph, probably something around $5 million and $8 million. You know, for a league average player, you're getting some decent surplus value there. More recently, he's shown an ability to stay on the field, which has been an issue in the past. But the ability to play 160 games a year is very, very valuable, especially at second base. I think the issue with trading Murph is going to be who plays second base for the 2014 Mets, Chris.
Yeah, and absolutely. I mean, we touched on the option of maybe platooning Tejada there if he weren't in the starting role at shortstop, but I'm not so sure that they trade Murphy that he suddenly becomes the answer at the position. You know, Wilmer Flores, second baseman, question mark?
I'd do it before I did Eric Young Jr. I had a long conversation on Twitter about this this afternoon. And do I think Wilmer Flores is a second baseman? I'm steadfast in my belief that Wilmer Flores is not a major league second baseman. Are there people in the Mets organization, scouting directors or scouts or people in the front office that think Wilmer Flores is a shot at second base? Certainly possible. You know, Matt Eddy of Baseball America, who is much better and more sources than me, has written as much that there are people in the front office that see him as a second baseman. And I'd give him the shot before I gave Eric Young Jr. the shot, certainly. You know, I've talked, every scout I've talked to, including Mets scouts, don't see him as a second baseman. They see him in some more extreme cases as a first base only guy. You know, can I think he can be a below average third baseman for somebody? Certainly. At least in the near term. But again, if you think he's a, I think Oliver has him at 260, 300, 400. Yeah, that's kind of Murph-ish. If you think he'll give you Murph-ish defense, yeah, maybe you roll with Wilmer Flores for a year and see what you have and try to upgrade elsewhere. I'd be okay with that. I don't know. I just don't have very strong feelings on a Daniel Murphy trade anymore. I just don't think you're getting, you know, the best case scenario is you're getting a Murph-ish player elsewhere. But if you look at the way the Mets are moving in this hot stove season, you know, assuming they sign Curtis Granderson, your 2014 outfield is pretty much set. You know, with Lagares, assuming he's not in, you know, a giant full leg cast in a week.
Which is possible.
Well, sure, it's possible. Why not? But you got, you know, Lagares, Chris Young, Granderson, you know, Eric Young is your fourth outfielder, and then, you know, Matt Dendecker is your fifth outfielder. You know, what are you at that point, what are you trading Murphy for is the thing. You know, if you're trading for Jock Peterson, he's not a huge immediate upgrade on Chris Young or Granderson, certainly. You have Puelo waiting in the wings if he's able to put it together in AAA like he did in AA last year. Where's the other clear upgrade spot? And they could use another starting pitcher, certainly. Is Murph bringing back, you know, a mid-rotation starter? I don't know that he is. They're rolling with Darnell at catcher, as they should. Probably a platoon of some sort at first. Is Murphy bringing a big upgrade back at first? You know, Murphy for Trumbo? The Angels already have Kendrick, and Kendrick's a better version, probably like the perfect world version of Daniel Murphy. I just don't see the obvious Murphy. I don't think he's bringing back a shortstop, which would be the clear spot you need an upgrade. I mean, I'd like to make, could you package, you know, Murph and G for Ibar and something else? You know, the Angels aren't a great trading partner because there's nothing good and close in their system. I don't know, there's not, I guess I'll put it this way. Is Daniel Murphy bringing back a better starting pitcher than Jerome Williams, who's freely available right now, that was just not tendered by the Angels? I don't know that he is.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm fine with Daniel Murphy as the, you know, pencil him in as the, is he an ideal number two hitter? No, you'd rather he hit six or seven. But on the 2014 Mets, he's probably hitting number two and playing second base and being a league average, batting average dependent player, and that's okay. That's what I got on Daniel Murphy.
I am with you. There you go.
I mean, he's not an exciting player. He's kind of an underrated story in a way, because we've talked about it on the podcast. You know, small college guy, happened to go to the same school as Tony Benrazard's kid. You know, maybe got drafted as a favor and worked himself into a major league second baseman. You know, a guy that can, you know, he's a second division starter, fine. Sure. There's a lot of second division teams, probably 15 of them, if you want to do the math. You know, Daniel Murphy can play for my team. I got no problem with that. There's just not a lot of surplus value there anymore, given that he's an ARB 2 this year. And you're only getting 2 years of control. I just don't see him, assuming the Mets sort out their outfield, I just don't see him bringing back a good enough return to make it worth trading him.
Yeah, no, I agree. If it comes up and something worthwhile is there, then I certainly don't blame them. But it's hard to see that happening.
Yeah, I just don't. Yeah, I don't see the obvious trading part. I mean, are you trading him to the Royals for your Donnie Ventura? Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. Certainly. I'll do that in a heartbeat.
Right.
I trade him to the Royals for Raul Mondesi. The other Raul Mondesi. His kid. Raul Alberto Mondesi. who's further away, but, you know, a top 50 prospect. I'd do that. I just don't see the Royals doing that. Though, who knows? The Royals. But I'm fine with Dylan Murphy and the 2014 Mets. I just don't. I think, again, it's better if he's your sixth best hitter than your third best hitter, but like I said, he can play for me. So that covers the emails for this week. As always, you can email the podcast at podcast@amazonavenueaudio.com. And once again, I've been trying not to leave the housekeeping for the end of the show, because I think kind of has the show sort of like dribble or crawl across the finish line. But I forgot to do the housekeeping before I did the email, so we're going to do the housekeeping now. This has been Amazing Avenue Audio, episode 45. Amazing Avenue Audio is the official podcast of your SB Nation, New York Mets site, Amazing Avenue. You can find us on AmazingAvenue.com. Follow us on Twitter at Amazing Avenue. And I'm going to do this live on the podcast since I've been bad about it recently. I should look up the actual email address for the Facebook group, which I assume is just www.facebook.com/AmazingAvenue. Let's see. Amazing Avenue Fans. So it's www.facebook.com/AmazingAvenue Fans is the Facebook page. As far as the podcast goes, you can find us on iTunes. Just search for Amazing Avenue Audio, and you can listen or subscribe right there. Conveniently, if you just put Amazing with the apostrophe in, it auto-completes. So you don't have to type it all out. I found that out today. if you do subscribe, and I ask that you do, you can also rate and review the podcast there. It helps with our search engine optimization. You can also find the podcast on the Stitcher app, where I assume they do something similar. So if you want to review it on the Stitcher app, I give you the thumbs up. I probably won't be able to read them or give you props for doing it, because I'm not on the Stitcher app. But knock yourself out. I encourage it. You can also download directly from AmazingAvenueAudio.com or listen to the embedded player that goes up on the podcast post at Amazing Avenue proper. My co-host this week was Chris McShane. You can find him on Twitter at Chris McShane. I'm your host, Jeffrey Paternostro. You can find me on Twitter at Jeff Paternostro, where I'll probably have more things to say about the Sheffield Wednesday managerial situation in the coming days, and maybe some things about Mets. Maybe not much else to talk about. I think we've covered the agenda, and it actually may have gone longer than episode 44, which I did not anticipate. But that's what happens when I have a glass of bourbon and talk about social media. Or Mets prospects on social media. I have a lot of thoughts about Corey Vaughn and other people and how they handle their social media things. But I'll be good. Okay. I'll be good, Chris, and wrap up the show here.
All right.
This has been episode 45. We'll be back next week. I always say we'll be back next week, and then this week we did two episodes. We'll be back next week. I'm not going to do another episode between now and Tuesday-ish, would be my guess, depending on how the winter meetings go. We may record Monday night. May give an extra day to let the winter meetings breathe. I won't be at the winter meetings. I assume you won't either.
I will not.
I don't know, a lot of people go, and good for them. I just imagine it's like 500 bloggers like in the lobby on Twitter the entire time.
Yeah.
So, I guess if you want updates, follow at Chris Cotillo, who seems to be breaking everything. The SB Nation answer to MLB trade rumors, basically. Writes for MLB Daily Dash. One of the SB Nation family of blogs, so I'll I'll toe the company line. And he's done a great job. I mean, he's broken pretty much every major deal for the last couple of days. He was a major figure on Trade Tuesday.
He was.
But until the Mets sign Curtis Granderson or others or something real happens, probably 5 minutes after I hit stop on this recording, it's been Amazing Avenue Audio, episode 45, and we will see you next week.